Grand Rising, gods, goddesses, kings, and queens. Thank you for showing up to another episode of That White Girl. I have the honor of having, I'm excited when he comes on, Patrick Alexander, the COF of the Black Liberation Movement out of Mississippi, on the show today. He has some really big things, huge things that he's doing, and is in charge of or responsible for or has a hand in, however you want to say it. So, Patrick Alexander, welcome. How are you today, sir?
Peace, blessings. Black power to the family. Good to hear from you again, Kim. Good to be back on the podcast.
Yes, as always. So I really wanted to share the secret, but I'd rather hear it from you because I know how it's going to sound coming from you and your power and your passion. So let's talk about what we're actually here today. We have an absolute agenda today, and it's to share something with as many people as possible.
That's right. Right, Kim. And I appreciate you again for the opportunity to come on this podcast that has been constantly growing. I see you've been interviewing a lot of people that's affiliated with the Black Liberation Movement and what it is that we're doing, and our people, the individuals that compose the Black Liberation Movement and their individual expertise in areas of battle that they fight in. So I've been watching the platform grow. Now, remember the day we were discussing you doing this podcast, and to see it growing astronomically the way that it is, I'm happy for you, and I'm glad to be back again. But talking about this so-called secret, there's not much of a secret. It's a proclamation. This year we are proclaiming 2020 to be Black History Year. And we want to begin to saturate the year with events that's gonna highlight the fact that we determined that this Black History Year. And what we're gonna set off is on January the 20th, downtown Memphis. We call it Operation 2020 Vision. That's 20,000 people with feet on the ground with 2020 vision, looking forward, pushing forward, determined with a self-determination of Black pride and Black unity right there in downtown Memphis. We looking forward to a lot of people coming out and taking a position with us on that day. So, and we also looking for you to be there, Kim.
Oh, you already know I'm coming. As soon as I heard about it, I was like, gotta get out of here, gotta be in Memphis on such and such a day. You know, I already hit you up about the parade so I could see if I could get a hotel on the route. I'm definitely showing up proudly to support you and your endeavors and what you're doing. And it's so important, as you know, and you know how I feel that it is so important. Everybody, whatever anybody is doing is really important right now. It's a really crucial time. I think,
right.
And a lot of distractions, big and small. And I'm really excited for you and this parade. So talk about what led to, well, I shouldn't say talk about what led to, because that sounds like an interview question, but you know what I mean? Like, how did you end up with the thought of 20,000, you know, with the 2020, you know, it being 2020 vision year or whatever? And I mean, I already know how the ancestors work through you. So I already know, but I mean, I want people to know, you know, what inspires you and what moves you, what motivates you, and why you're so incredibly passionate. Because I don't think they understand. They think, okay, he's Black and he should be, but that's not really the case. There's so much more to it about who you are and why you do what you do.
Mm-hmm. Well, just to kind of, you know, answer your question in general. What inspired me was the fact that, first of all, you know, we facilitate, you know, the Black Liberation Movement. And, you know, after years of being on this path and trying to create this momentum with our people and creating a liberated movement and aspiring to liberation, you have to begin to devise ways of getting to your people. You have to create events. You got to create excitement. You got to create spirit. Come to realize now, you know, that we have to use these events. We got to be use these monumental events, and we have to begin to try enough force and power to bring people together. So Dr. Isaac Richmond, who is a Jagna of mine, he's a barber, he's a teacher of mine, he's been convening this parade for a number of years now, and he never relinquished control of the parade to the city, who the city of Memphis, who always wanted to take it over from the very first one, and the success of the very first one. But Dr. Isaac Richmond, who is the founder of CORE, which is the Commission on Religion and Racism, basically took me under his wing about and basically the authority of the Black Liberation Movement. So this year I decided that we would do something monumental, and they were asking for 10,000, but since it was the year 2020, I said, why not 20,000? And that became my passion and my inspiration. So I just woke up one day and I just said, hey, we're gonna do Operation 2020. And that's 20,000 people in Memphis, Tennessee, boots on the ground with 2020 vision, looking forward and pushing forward Black self-determination on that day. So that's where it came from. And now it's all about putting it all together.
You already know I love it. I think it's a brilliant idea. And I would love to be a part of 20,000 strong in this, you know, fighting for the same thing, which at the essence is just one thing, everything else pushed aside, and it just be about melanin, you know what I mean? So I'm excited for you. I'm excited that you have this platform. I'm excited to be there. I'm just curious. I mean, I'm probably asking you questions you may not know, but I mean, do you know how many people normally show up in Memphis? Because that's got to be a big parade there in Memphis. It's got to be huge.
Yeah, well, actually, it's not as huge as people would think. With so many other parades taking place that day, it's it has kind of been pressed for numbers. You know what I'm saying? And with, you know, Doc, you know, getting older, you know, Doc been doing this for 42 years. And when I say Doc, I'm referencing Dr. Richmond, who you had the opportunity to meet. He was a great man, great mentor, and great warrior of ours that goes under the radar. He's truly an unsung hero. But, you know, the numbers have kind of dwindled over the year. So, you know, with passing the parade and the baton on to the Black Liberation Movement, we looking to re-inspire people, to reinvigorate people, and to get people down there. So we would say the last time I participated, we had a few thousand people, you know, that participated in the march. I wouldn't say it exceeded five. So, you know, we're in a rush now, Kim, to make sure that we're able to galvanize these numbers. We're not absolutely sure that we're going to be able to ascertain 20,000, but we're going to shoot dead at it to, you know, try to get it done. And what we're doing to do that, we're not shooting at individuals. We're shooting at organizations. You know, we want to get organizations involved, because if we get organizations involved, we automatically get people. So that's what we're doing now.
Well, that's really good to know, because I wasn't aware of all that, which is another reason why I wanted you to come on. I mean, we had like the quickest conversation. You were like, hey, the parade. And I was like, hey, come on. So we didn't get a lot of prep time for this podcast, but we don't need it as much. And our conversation is always good.
Yeah. You know how we do it. It's all going.
Yeah. So, I mean, I'm definitely pushing the parade. I tell everybody that I talk to, I tell them how important it is. I tell them about the 20,000 and how important that is, you know, to have that type of unity again. I mean, you already know the Washington and, you know, some other things where that's so few and far between. And, you know, I think it's a brilliant idea to have more events and to have more people coming in for those events as well too. You know what I'm saying? Not just necessarily Memphis, but you know, Birmingham's gonna be on the map, and my daughter may be coming from Florida. I mean, you know, people are coming.
That'll be good.
She might not come back, but you know, I'm excited about it, and for so many reasons, Patrick, for so many reasons. Like, I think you deserve to be doing this. I think that as hard as you work and as much as you do, that is not seen. And I know, before you say a word, I know you ain't doing nothing to be seen, and I know that. But that being said, I think that Black folks need to see how important the Black Liberation Movement is, and how, you know, how to be seen in that sense, that okay, you know what, we might really be doing something now to have more people believe in the movement, which you and I both know is what is needed right now, that more Black folks need to believe in the movement, because we ain't talking about white folks here. So I'm thrilled for you that you have this opportunity yes.
Yeah, let me add, Leah, what you just said. You know, this is never about me. You know, as I said, we had many conversations about this in the movie. It's always about the progression and the liberation of our people. And this is what this event, we need to see ourselves doing something. You know, I was in the center last week, we was talking. And we had a nice contingency of children here. And we've been getting a lot of children that's coming to the center on Sunday. And, you know, I explained to them that we're living in a paradox. We're living in a paradox. And what I meant by that, one of the children was like, what is that? What is a paradox? It's when you think one thing psychologically, but your reality suggests something different. And that's a paradox. So it's hard for us as Black people to actually theorize liberation while we live in the reality of white supremacy every day. It's a force and power that we have to deal with every day. So what I'm saying is that we have to begin to see ourselves doing things. And this is one of the events that we need to pull off so that we can see ourselves on that day with no organizational boundary. We have to be able to see ourselves being able to network organizations. We have to be able to see ourselves in our full glory. And I think that would be a culminating day if we can get this, all the things leading up to it. You know, if we can get the organizations to start pushing it, because we press for time. We can get the organizations to start pushing, and we can have what I call a spontaneous combustion. You know, we don't have enough time. You know, I'm hearing a lot of people that saying, you know, we don't have enough time to galvanize 20,000 people. Well, you know, I'm thinking spontaneous combustion. I'm thinking everybody do their part, and we'll be surprised at what we can do collectively. We don't understand our collective power, and that's what we want to be able to show. We want to be able to show that when Black people's backs are pushed against the wall, if we come together, we can perform. We can produce. We do it for everybody else. Why not do it for ourselves? And on the 20th of January, we need to be able to see ourselves in our full glory, and we can begin from there to start this whole decade. And like I was telling Crystal earlier today in a conversation, I was like, look, we have to be able to see ourselves in our full glory, pushing forward. And on 2020, we can have that, and we can start the building Black Power decade, and that can start from there.
I absolutely agree. I think it, once again, one of your more brilliant, you know, ideas. And that's what I love so much about you, is that you, everything you do, every money you make, every penny you put away and towards, you always have something going on that is solely related to the empowerment of Black people. And sometimes it's multifaceted, like you doing the water. And, you know, so alkaline water is incredibly healthy, but, you know, everything you do is back into the Black Liberation Movement. So it's twofold. Mm-hmm. It's about education, you know, about health, and also it's about business and empowerment again, you know, right. What I'm saying? And black owned, right. And operated and created and manufactured and processed, you know, it goes right. So deep. So I mean, I'm definitely 100% behind you. I definitely am going to support this as much as I possibly can and get it out there, you know, as much as I possibly can as well too. I mean, wouldn't it be great if busloads right. of people showed up from all over the country? That that's would be right. something else.
That's right.
That's
right. That's
right. So, you know any of the... Go ahead.
What's that, Kim? Say it again. I'm sorry.
Oh, I was going to ask about times and stuff, but go ahead and say what you're going to say about the busloads of people coming in.
No. I wasn't really referencing the busloads of people coming in. I hope that we do have some busloads of people coming in. You know, we fighting, we kind of competing against other, you know, smaller towns that are going to be doing some of the same things for their town. So we need to be able to snatch some of these, and you know, you don't really want to take from them numbers, but I think, you know, it would serve the whole black community a stronger purpose if we can make this showing in Memphis, you know, being that's what King was taken out of here, you know, and they call it Memphis the city of the dead. And I navigate the conscious community all the time, and they almost internalize that narrative that it's the city of the dead. Well, it gotta now be the city of the resurrection of black people, you know, and that's what we want this to be. We want, on the 20th of January, we want an emanating spirit to come forth from Memphis. So we want to be able to steal people, you know, from these other celebrations that may just be what you would call performance status quo, almost feeling like they have to, you know, they obligated to have a King Parade, you know, and go through the formalities. This is a special event. Operation 2020 Vision is a special event. It's a pivotal event. It's an event that ready to shift the paradigm of black people. So that's what we want to do in Memphis. We want to be able to shift the paradigm of black people starting on January 20th. So we really, really, really want people to push, the people that listen to this podcast, start hashtagging Operation 2020 Vision so that we can begin to catch on to what this is. And you can also go to the website, www.blackliberationmovement.com website, and register your organization. We asking for mosques, churches, organizations, businesses, fraternities, sororities. We ask for all of them to come out on this day and celebrate with us. And we actually working on the official t-shirt. I got that coming soon. Maybe posting that soon. And I'm going to need y'all to share that as well. And we're going to try to have people outfit with the same things on. And I already know you got your order in, right?
You already know. You already know I got my order in. You already know. So, so it's on January 20th.
That's right.
And it starts at what time? Do you know yet?
We're gonna meet at the old slave auction block. Now check that out, Kim. We gonna meet at the old slave auction block. You know.
Wow.
And that right there is enough right there, you know, to speak volume about what it is that we're doing. You know, we have to become more connected with our history. As I sit here in the Culture Center right now, what we teach, and I'm looking at a picture of Amos Wilson, our great psychological historian, that said history is not just there to be researched, but history is there to remind us of what it is that we're supposed to be doing. So when we go back to that old slave auction block where our family's been torn apart, sent different ways, you know, and destroyed, you know, just for white supremacist interests and to build white supremacist capitalistic endeavors, you know, and it stripped our families apart just to go back and to have that moment before that parade gets started. We leave from that place. And just to be reminded, and just like Professor Small has always taught me, we have to forget what we learned and remember what we already know. We have to go back to understanding what it is that happened to us. And on that day, we get a chance to reflect back at that auction block where our family was torn apart. And then we will proceed forward in a day of celebration of Black unity. And I want to be able to convey that message loud and clear at 9:30 right there on that auction block so that we can understand fully what it is that we're doing that day, and we can always have that day etched in our memory.
Yes, I'm almost at a loss for words because something else I didn't know was going down. So again, another reason why, you know, I wanted you here and wanted to speak about the importance of what you're doing and the importance of how you're doing it now that I know.
Mm-hmm.
Truly profound, actually. And, you know, a lot of people, I'm going to share with you, I probably haven't shared this on my podcast, but I'm going to share this. So I have this thing, if you will, about slave movies. And I won't watch them. They're, I mean, there's no words to describe, you know, what happened. And there's, just nothing. And you know, I know people got all kinds of name for it, and, you know, me being white and this and that and the other and whatever. And one day, I mean, I've seen bits and pieces, but one day somebody said to me, you probably really need to watch them. So, I mean, you know, watch it through the pain. And I haven't, because that was a recent conversation I had with somebody, but I mean, I've been thinking long and hard about it. And I say all that to say, I don't think people understand fully, because they, I don't know why. I don't know if it's just flat out oppression, just lack of history, just the narrative that's pushed. I'm not sure, but I watched another gentleman go to where they held the slaves before they put them on the boat. It was like a big cavern somewhere. And I watched how moved, like beyond anything that was imaginable, you know what I mean? And is and knowing that that spot is in Memphis, knowing it's there. I mean, it's been there. It's not like it went away. But to start right there, people see, like truly see what we are talking about and how far Black folks haven't come, unfortunately. And then have the opportunity to walk away from that in celebration of Black liberation. That's fucking powerful, right, Patrick? I mean, seriously, that's unbelievably powerful. I'm, you know, moved by the whole thing. I think it's amazing, and I can't wait to show up there for a lot of reasons. You know? And so. Yeah. Wow. And so will you soon have like a map or an idea of the course of the parade?
Yeah, we'll be mapping that out. And like I said, we behind the eight ball, but we'll be getting that done within the next 24 hours as far as the t-shirt design and posting the website again so that people can go on and actually putting a map of the parade route. It's not a real long route, and it's not a real long route. Last time we did it, it was very cold that particular day, so we don't want people, going on the parade route, you know, for a long time. But it culminates at the end of, at the Lorraine Motel, and it's basically a celebration there, you know, and then you know how we do it, we Black folk. So when we get there, we gonna celebrate, we gonna have the music going and everything, you know. So that's where a lot of the networking and the festivities gonna take place as well.
Yes.
But I just wanna go back to something that you put my mind on when we was talking about the history and the slave movies. And I hear a lot of Black people say, you know, I can't watch slave movies. And I know who these people are. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. And I really have learned, you know, and you know, I got a lot of great teachers. One of whom is Mwalimu Baruti, who heads the Okobit Institute down in Atlanta. And I take precious pearls from these teachers and I keep them with me so that I can reteach them to the masses that they are not able to reach. And he wrote a book called The Kabuka. And it's Kabuka means to remember. It's the remembrance. And Black people in this society, we don't get a history lesson in none of the major institutions that we spend a lot of our time in, being the educational school system. We don't get our history, nor do we get our history in the church. So when we don't have interaction with our past, and when you talk about the Maafa, that's what you're talking about when you're talking about that whole transatlantic experience. You talk about the Maafa. Every Black person needs to be able to internalize that so that we can reconnect with the horrors of what happened in our past and try to bring that forth into our being so that we can act and perform in a way that our ancestors would have us perform. We cannot forget about our struggles. And the Maafa, that whole experience of leaving our motherland and being carried across those waters and being dragged into what we call the institution of slavery for 400 years, that has to be internalized and taught. So when people, African Black people, you know, we have to be able to stomach what it is that we went through. We have to be able to internalize that. I have children myself that have not been thoroughly taught as the Jews would teach the Jewish Holocaust. And this is done so that this would never be repeated, and it is done so that they can remember the experience, and it never would take place again. So, you know, this is the thing that we have to do. You know what I'm saying? We have to be able to, you know, stomach these things so that we can be able to teach, and so that we would not be able, you know, that we would not be able to, we would not, you know, render ourselves, you know, to repeating that again.
Right. So
I just wanted to speak to that.
No, and I'm glad that you did, because it says a lot, and I'm in an absolute, of course, agreement with you that, you know, I'm at a loss for words, really, because this podcast wasn't really what I intended, and you know how I get all emotional about stuff. So here I go being emotional with Patrick Alexander. Nothing shocking for him, but for those of you who don't know, this would be me, because regardless of my race, my children's pain far outweigh any pain that I have ever endured in my life. Mm-hmm. They're me feeling what they feel from the life that they lived. Not feeling that being Black, or I'm not saying any of that, but feeling the pain from what they feel. The torture all in itself that I'm not okay living with, or I am okay living with, but I'm not okay that they have to keep enduring such tragedies. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Somebody posted today, actually, and it was a beautiful view of a lake and trees and, I don't know, sunrise or sunset. And there was an old, old barn. And I don't mean to get sidetracked. I swear we'll come back to the parade.
No, go ahead.
But there was an old barn in the picture. And what he posted was, are you forgetting the view worrying about the old barn? Because I know everybody says forget your past and focus on now or the future, or, you know, you can't go back and you can't change things and you can't do this and you can't do that. And honest to God, as much as I understand what is being said and why it's being said, I also understand that there's also a narrative that got squeezed into the Black community to forget your past as well, too. And so it's just kind of, as everything else of the narratives that get trapped inside of an all-white narrative, You know, it just gets lost in that narrative. It doesn't go anywhere. It doesn't become anything. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And I, but anyway, he said about the barn, he said, you know, are you looking at the barn and forgetting the view? You know, you're worried about this old barn. And I thought about it for just a quick moment. You know my history. So I thought about it for a quick moment and I said, well, what if I looked at the whole picture? Because the old barn is really right next to the view, you know? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I said, because at the end of the day, I was built or rebuilt in that barn that sits next to that beautiful view to be where I am. Mm-hmm. And I think that's exactly really what you're premising, that, you know, it is really time for Black folks to truly, truly see and understand the depths of slavery and know that they need to pay attention to that old barn while embracing the new view. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. You know, my kids, I went to a, I'll say this quick. I went to a family reunion one year and it was the first reunion. Who am I going to get called on this one? Whew! It was the first reunion that one of my great uncles had shown up after he was dismissed from the last one for making his kids get out of the pool with my babies because his kids weren't going to swim with any N-words. Okay? My cousins and, you know, it's just flagrant ignorance. I get it, but I'm about the only one that does. Have all this literature on the table and all of this fucking plowing tools and, you know, for farming and all of these things. And, you know, my one cousin in there, she's talking to this uncle that got thrown out, and I hear her like, you know, and she just going on and on about the, and I know the truth. I understand where I come from. It is what it is. I can't change it. I can't move it. I can't adjust it. I feel myself liberated from all of that, my own self in my own, you know, journey because of that. But, you know, I just stopped because I, you know, I really wanted to say something to him anyway. You know what I mean? And I said, isn't it amazing? Isn't it amazing? I got all my babies behind me. I said, isn't it amazing that I'm standing here and y'all are showing, y'all are, have all this slave stuff out here. And y'all were owners of slaves. You owned slaves. And here I am with babies from slaves. I said, this is a really beautiful moment right now. We're all standing here in the same spot, you know? And it sounds horrible and it sounds bad, but that is the reality. And that's the truth of where I came from. I can't deny that. And I had to witness it, grow up in it, look at it. They didn't. I never forget that we had slaves. I've heard slave stories about my great-great-granddaddy owning slaves since I was little. I didn't have to forget. I never had the opportunity to forget the horror of all those stories. You know what I'm saying? So I think maybe that's part of why, you know, a piece of why my mindset is like it is, because I didn't, you know, forget that part of it. You know what I mean? It was always, you know, at my forefront. And you know, so for you to be doing it the way you're doing it and doing it right now in this moment, Patrick Alexander, I'm not sending nothing to you but love, light, and prayer in reference to this. You know what I mean? I would say I'd help you call on your ancestors, but I already know how many you got hanging around you, so that's not even necessary.
Right. Well, I appreciate it, Kim. And, you know, the sentiments are heartfelt, and I feel, you know, because I have heard your story, I do know your story. Been knowing you now for a few years, and I know your children, you know, especially Bertha, you know, and how much she take it to heart, you know, and proud of who she is, you know, even to the point where she wanna, you know, pack up her clothes and come say, I'm going to help you. You know,
yeah.
And that speaks volume, you know, as you know how you're raising those children and you know what you're trying to instill in them. But let me say this, to give a little more clarity to the history. If Black people, if we are not reminded of our history, then we will continue to be worthless to ourselves. You know what I'm saying? And we'll continue to become, you know, continue to be the mammary glands of the world. And mammary gland, nothing more than a titty that everybody comes suck on. And, you know, we'll feel good doing it. We'll feel good doing it because that has become our role. You know, I sit here in this, and I look at the ancestors that we have, you know, adorning the wall. I look in the face of Harriet Tubman. I look in the face of Mega Evans. I'm looking in the face of Ida B. Wells and Amos Wilson and Fannie Lou Hamer and Kwame Ture, Dick Gregory. I'm looking in the face of the children that lives were snuffed out by white supremacy. I'm talking about Emmett Till, Trayvon Martin, Tamir Wright, and the list go on and on. So when you're looking at these people, you see what they have done. And then you know that the majority of black people are not exposed to these type of these people in their lives on a daily basis. Then you understand why you do what you do. You know, I understand why I do what I do. You know, it's heartbreaking, you know, that, you know, the message is not received and is not supported as it should be. You know, the finances are hard for us to maintain what it is that we do. You know, my personal finance is absorbed. You done heard this story more than once. So you know what I have to deal with on a personal level to maintain the stability that we do have, you know, with the movement. And when you think about, you know, the gross negligence of our people financially and dealing with our problems and how easy it would be if we just dedicated a nominal fee, a nominal amount of our income to what it is that we doing, how easy it would be for us to change our condition. You know, so, you know, we just really gonna press hard this year, this decade, you know, to bring about the paradigm shift. And for people who really don't understand what paradigm shift is, I'm gonna take 1 minute to explain what paradigm is and what the shift is. Paradigm is a set model way of doing things over a period of time. We'll say a dispensation of time. It's a set model way of how things are done over a period of time, a dispensation of time. Now, when you think about that definition of paradigm, what I just gave you, a set model way of doing things, you think about black people's position. You think about black people's position, and you see that the set model way of doing things in this society, black people are at the bottom of every model. So when we talking about shifting the paradigm, we talking about shifting the position of black people. So when I explain it to the preachers who don't feel like black liberation fits into their agenda, I said, well, what is that bottom rail that the Bible is talking about that will rise to the top? What is that? Okay, what is that bottom rail that the Bible speaks of that we're right on top? You know, and once we begin to shift the paradigm, it's a very interesting thing that happens. Not only does the upper class become uncomfortable, when you start to shift the paradigm for black people become uncomfortable because we're so comfortable being at the bottom. We're so comfortable being last. So when we start to really push the envelope, and I tell people it's going to be a civil war, it's already a civil war in the black community. When we shift in this paradigm, we're going to have a battle with our own people, you know, for the betterment of our own people. So, you know, so many people, they have become comfortable with the paradigm as the way it is because we're dealing with a lot of white people in black skin that's right here in the black community. They're fighting just as hard as white people to maintain the system the way that it is. So, you know, this endeavor that we're doing that's called the Black Liberation Movement, and I tell people all the time, you know, the most intelligent black people would be doing what it is that we're doing. The smart ones, the ones who regurgitate what the master teach them, those are the ones that we have to fight against as well. So the intelligent black people will be doing what it is that we're doing. They'll be supporting what it is that we're doing. And that's where we at. So that's what the paradigm shift is, and that's what it entails.
Right. And there has to be enough people involved for it to shift. And that's you know, I think we had this conversation. I had Edouard on here, and you know, he said, he asked me, you know, he posed the question to me, what's the first thing you think Black folks should do for Black liberation? Now, at the end of the day, it don't really matter what I think. We already know what would come up against me, but I'm just saying, I said everything and anything, whatever way that you are involved in Black liberation, move, make this year the year that you actually put into motion, physically, mentally, emotionally, whatever it is that you need to do it, get there so that you can do what you were intended to do. Because that shift ain't gonna happen on one particular thing. Like, oh, we'll just change politics, or oh, we'll just change religion, or oh, we'll just change this. It's not gonna happen that way. It's going to take a multitude of Black folks doing a multitude of things whose primary and only focus is melanin.
I tell you this.
That's it.
That's the reason why I gave you the name for this podcast, That White Girl, because you're probably the only white person that has that understanding that I ever had a conversation with. Now, basically what you're saying is a term that we derived for what it is that you're saying, because you gave Edouard the proper answer. You know, he asked you what's the first thing. It ain't no first thing. You know, it's everything. Black people, everything in a liberated fashion. I'm sitting here, I look at John Clark. John Henry Clark said, use every tool at your disposal for Black liberation. Every tool.
Yep.
White people use every tool possible. The reality that we call white supremacy. What we, you know, call America. So the term that we have to use now, and I'm kind of giving a definition. Black liberation have many definitions, but this is one that I think is suitable for what it is that we say. Black liberation is the divine synchronicity of every facet of Black life coming together in the face of white supremacy or the chaos. We have to synchronize every area of battle. Entertainment, education, economics, sex, law, labor, war, politics, religion. Hell, we got to synchronize all of that. But we need the Edouard Hawkins. We need the Afro Keith. We need the Crystal Denise. We need everybody to bring what it is that they have in a liberated way so that we can break these bonds and that we can shift this paradigm.
Absolutely. I 100% agree. And we're here I go. Somebody said to me today, you funny how you say we about Black folks. I said, people that know me, we have an understanding. But it's going to start. It is going to start on January 20th, right?
That's right.
2020. And I'm gonna put a link to the, because I don't, is it an actual address now that they have where you guys are meeting at the auction block? I don't want there to be any confusion, like, oh, I didn't know it was there, I didn't know where it was, you know.
Well, what I'm gonna do, it's on the corner of A.W. Willis in Maine. That's the meeting point. The corner of A.W. Willis in Maine, downtown.
Okay.
Memphis. Yeah.
9:30.
But what I'm gonna do? I'm gonna send you details.
Okay.
To your inbox. I'm gonna send details to your inbox. So you know, once we hang up, that's what we're working on. All.
Yeah, it's official. It's totally official. So, and I already talked my other half into wearing one of my T-shirts. So you're kind of obligated now.
That's right.
So, you already know how much I absolutely adore you and how much I believe in you and how important what you're doing is. And, you know, I know your part, you know my part, and, you know, I love the relationship that we have, and I appreciate your mind on a level I can't express, because, as you know, it isn't like I can have too many conversations with too many people at the level that you and I speak, because, you know, we share similar views, which is, what do you call me? I think you call me an anomaly. I have bad verbiage this week. So yes. So I appreciate you as always coming on, but I'm more glad you did because of what it was about this time. Not that every time isn't important and that every conversation we have is important, but this is important because I feel it. Like, I feel the energy that you're talking about. I feel what needs to happen. I can see what needs to happen. And I believe in what's about to happen. So thank you for coming on and sharing your time with me. I know it's valuable. I know you're a busy guy. And, you know, I'm grateful, as always, for you showing up.
Thank you, Kim. I'm glad you had us on. I'm glad you took the time to call. And we had the opportunity to do this podcast. So we're going to make it happen. I appreciate you. I appreciate everything that you're doing.
Thank you. And I will definitely see you in Memphis. And for everybody listening, if you don't already know, I love you and I believe in each and every one of you. No doubt. See you next episode. Bye. Peace.
Black power.